You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on AM 1510, right here on our dial is WWBC. My show is called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We are heard on WWBC AM 1510, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. Ellen O'Neill is back. She took a little day off last Monday, and so she'll tell you all how to tune in to listen online.
That's right. You can find us on Facebook, of course, under Sita Media Inc., and then we also have a website, SitaMediaInc.com, and you can find all of our archive shows. You can just hit that on-demand button and just look for the date, and we also have pictures and so forth of a blog that comes up. And also on the radio program as well, you can also hit that on demand. You can listen to us live. You can also get all of the archive shows there as well on 1510wwbc.com.
Yep, that's wonderful.
Hard to believe it's been 10 years.
We have. Thank you. It's hard to believe. It's, you know what? When you do something from your heart and it's fun, and like we always tell people, our show is unscripted. It's very educational and it's very informative. And we take our life experience, our education, what we learn from talking to each other, our history, our background, our religion, what our parents taught us, and we put it into action, right? And so every Monday, Ellen and I sit here and we talk about kitchen table topics about things happening right here in Brevard County, Florida, in our state in Florida, and around the nation and the world. And I have to say, we have talked about shows about Americans who scrimp and save, try to pay their bills, try to pay their taxes, try to have a better life for themselves and their kids. And we've talked about things that good Americans are doing as advocates so that they can help themselves and other people as well. And one of such people is our friend who's in the studio with us, Kelly. Kelly Clark, is it?
Yeah, Clark.
Yeah, it's such an easy name. We never have easy names anymore. I'm like shocked. Kelly Clark. Oh, isn't there a country singer with the name of Kelly? Kelly Clarkson.
Clarkson.
So Kelly Clark is here, and her daughter, Noelle, was a victim of an accidental overdose. And Kelly's going to talk about a nonprofit that she founded called Project Noelle to honor her daughter and what she has taken her tragedy and turned it into advocacy. And oftentimes we see a lot of people who want to make a difference, and that's what they do. So welcome to our show, Kelly.
Thank you very much.
You're beautiful.
To be here. Thank you. So are you.
Yeah. And you know what, Ellen, like we were just talking, we almost forgot to open our show today because we were having such a good conversation.
I know, exactly.
But the truth is, you know, parents have it difficult in today's world.
Yes.
Right? Parents, you know, most parents have to figure out how to pay their rent, how to provide health insurance, how to put food on the table, how to get gas in the car, how to get from point A to point B. You know, people are struggling out there, and they need us, especially an advocate like Kelly, to talk and tell us how to cope. Because what happened to your daughter sounds to me like it's a coping thing. How do you cope when in this world when you're hooked on drugs?
Right, yeah.
You need a good health insurance. You need mental help. You need physical help, emotional help, financial help, and you have 7 children.
Yes, I do.
And so now you're raising her 2 kids, and we're going to talk to you in the second segment about that and about all the great things that Chase Bank is doing to help you as well. But Ellen, before we talk to Kelly Clark, the easy name,
right?
we have, you know, I'm always on Facebook chatting with people who are like-minded, people like myself who actually have found the secret of self-realization. What exactly is the secret of self-realization, right? We have a purpose on earth.
That's right.
We're all in this human body in a physical form, and it's an earthly journey. We're not here forever. And we start off as babies, and we need health insurance. We need affordable housing. We need food on the table. We need an education. We need opportunities. And we need people to be there in this big global village to look out for each other. Or else, why else are we here?
That's right.
You know, when we leave this great planet, whether we go to the cemetery or we end up in a cremation site, we don't really take anything with us. And anybody should know that.
The legacy you leave.
That's right. I mean, I work in a skilled rehab facility, and I've worked as a long-term care nurse for over, I want to say, 36 years of my life. And I've yet to see any of those people take anything with them except their good name and their character.
That's right. Exactly.
You know, and so while we're alive and we're able to use our senses, you know, to see and hear and think and speak, we're watching all these people who are so greedy and powerful and in control of the world's resources and the world's oil and whatever it is. And they're just grabbing. Hey, come on, stop the greediness. There's enough for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, now we see people talking about, you know, politically about taxes. Guess what? Ain't no socialism in America. We pay for social programs.
That's right.
Programs like, and you could rattle off the list, Medicaid, mm-hmm. the VA, military, public housing, public health, the roads, what else?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, the list goes on and on. Of everything that the food stamps, SNAP programs, WIC, all kinds of different programs.
Right, and the people who complain that and calling Democrats socialists are usually the ones who line up first to get those programs.
That's,
you know, and it's unfair. So I think all of us with a functional brain, we need to start saying, listen, if you make a lot of money and you're asked to give back some, that's okay. Because one day, one of the persons that you're helping with a social program just might be that nurse to start your IV.
Right.
It might be a nursing assistant or a nurse to change your adult brief. Mm-hmm. It might be me who tried to put a Foley catheter in you. Mm-hmm. And right. I'm gentle.
Yeah. You don't know.
I can tell you.
Yeah, but the point is that you don't know. And there are a lot of people that need assistance and help out there.
Yeah, I mean,
but you and I always talk about this, that we're fiscally responsible people. So,
but socially,
I mean,
liberal.
Socially want to make sure that everybody's taken care of.
But here's the thing. I mean, people say, well, I don't have children in public schools, so I shouldn't be paying taxes. Well, guess what? You do need somebody to draw your blood when you get older.
That's right.
You do need somebody to help you.
I don't have children.
You know, the older you get, you recognize that you're paying taxes for something called the strength of the young. Mm-hmm. We need the young people to take care of us. We're not going to be young forever. Mm-hmm. Although I look good. I'm not really. But anyways, so we have on the phone, you know, I always find a really good guest. And so we have a gentleman. His name is Michael Dobson. And he began providing consultancy and management services to various political campaigns beginning in 1998, we're going to give away his age as well, in the firms, in governmental relations practice. And he's on the phone, and he's going to chat with us this morning about a whole lot of things, including what's going to happen with this election, you know, on both parties. So, Michael, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Well, thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We really, really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
So you were born in a place called Mulberry, Florida. Tell us about Mulberry, Florida. I'd never heard of it.
I love Mulberry, Florida.
I mean, it just
right
made me think of Mulberry Cafe
it's
on
right
US 1.
Lakeland.
Is it?
Beautiful, yeah.
You know, there's a Mulberry Cafe right on US 1.
I do. I
right.
know that.
So tell us about Mulberry, Florida.
Well, Mulberry, Florida, if you look at a map of Florida, you will find that Mulberry is probably almost smack dead in the middle. It's really awesome. Central Florida, it's in Polk County, and when I grew up there, it was a really good place, particularly for African Americans who moved to Florida from various other places, some cases Georgia, South Carolina, and et cetera, because the citrus industry was extremely huge at that time, and also the phosphate industry was huge in Polk County. In fact, Polk County was considered the leader of phosphate in the world at that time.
Interesting.
You know, and Mulberry also is the home of Bad Cop Furniture, which was the kind of a large employer that put Mulberry on the map.
Oh, Ellen is shaking her head. She apparently knows about this furniture.
Yeah, it's Badcock Furniture. Yeah, it's a
Badcock Furniture.
Yeah, Badcock.
Isn't there one on here on US 1?
Oh, yeah. There's one on US 1.
Yeah,
one in,
I think they went out of business. I think I saw a sign. I'm not sure. But anyway, so on your interest is freelance writing, reading, jogging, tennis. You like surfing the web like me, and you're the president and CEO of Dobson Craig and Associates. Tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about Dobson Craig and Associates.
Sure. What Dobson Craig and Associates is, we started, we started out as a contract company in 1996 when we were doing some lobbying for various organizations just on contract, and we formalized our business in, I think it was 1998, we represent interests of various organizations that have items before the legislature, and also we from time to time engaged in political campaigns. We've managed and overseen statewide campaigns for governor and campaigns for congressional races, state senate, state house races. In some cases, local races. And also, Dobson Craig and Associates, we provide association management. For instance, we oversee the Florida Renewable Energy Producers Association, which I founded in 2007. And we also oversee the Dream Foundation, which is an organization that was formed in 2002. The Dream Foundation created the nation's first specialty license tag that has the image of Dr. Martin Luther King on it. You may have seen them on the cars in Florida where you can purchase in the tag office that has Dr. King's head bust on it. And that's something that I represented that organization in 2002. Governor Bush signed it into law in 2004. And about 2 years ago, I was approached, and my firm was approached to manage that organization. Which is something that we do, and we try and promote that license tag, and that tag provides proceeds to the March of the Dimes, Healthy Start, Sickle Cell Association of Florida, and some homeless organizations throughout the state of Florida.
Well, thank you. I mean, you're teaching us a lot of stuff, and it's amazing because you're also keeping the dream alive as well. For so many kids, because as people get older and we see this young generation coming up, we don't see a lot of kids reading like we used to. So it's good, even if you see the license plate, it'll jog somebody's memory to say something or start a conversation about Martin Luther King Jr.
Right, and what we do at the Dream Foundation is when we took over, we decided to make it more than just about the license tag, but to also develop a legislative agenda and a political arm to the organization in which we are opposed to the legislature to address those items in public policy that are in line with Dr. King's legacy. Those issues such as criminal justice reform, obviously voting, the Amendment 4, issues regarding small business, issues regarding health care and access to health care,
And investments, and most important, investments into communities of color. We you know, a lot of us are talking about that. I'll have to have you back one day to talk about that. You're also the founder and publisher of Talking Florida Politics. Where do you find time? We're all wondering. Like people ask me where I find time.
I don't sleep a lot, and I'm not home a lot.
but that's okay.
I just really enjoy what I do. I think that our purpose on this planet is to try to use whatever skill set God or the universe has given us to try and make a difference, so that it can be said that you being here was a benefit. That's what I try to do with my time.
That's what I tell people. When you finally meet the maker and he asks you, did you do your job on earth that I sent you to do? Did you find your purpose? I know a lot of us, we do find our purpose. And sometimes we might find it a little bit later in life. But it would be great to look him right in the eye or her and say, hey, this is what I did. And you have a sheet, you know, that you you did your best on earth for humanity. But one of these days, we'll have to see if we could send you some information about our guest who is in studio today, Noel from Kelly Clark with the
Project Noel.
She's also taken tragedy from the death of her daughter from opioids and turned it into a foundation where she's helping people as well. So I'll have to send you some information so you and her could contact each other and talk about that. But in the meantime,
he said he would love that.
See?
Yeah, me too.
But tell him a little bit about yourself really quick, Kelly.
Well, I'm Kelly Clark with a simple name. I am originally from Orlando, but now I reside in Ohio, but still have family down here. I'm back and forth. But yeah, we started Project Noel to help the kids that have been left behind or have suffered from this opioid epidemic.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll have to send you some information. Maybe you could do a little article on that as well. So you're watching what's going on politically all over the United States. And, you know, a lot of us are watching what's happening with COVID-19. People have made wearing a mask so political. Being a nurse myself, I was hoping to be out of masks by now at my job. But, of course, because of the irresponsible behavior all over the United States, we're watching people who just, they make it so political, they just want to wear a mask in large crowds and stuff. What are you seeing out there in Tallahassee? Are people paying attention to wearing a mask? Are they being responsible? What's happening over there?
Well, it's kind of an interesting question. One of the problems with how we are, as a nation, frankly, addressing COVID-19 is that it's really a hodgepodge of policy that is making things worse. For instance, in Tallahassee, we happen to have local leadership who decided early on that we would have a local mass ordinance. And Tallahassee politically is different from particularly from like your region, perhaps. It's more liberal. Local government has a lot more Democrats, and they just philosophically they see things a little differently. And then you travel to other places. I'll give you a good example. You might laugh about this, but I was in Baker County. I was coming from an event, and I stopped at a gas station, and no one was wearing a mask. No one inside the convenience store was wearing a mask. None of the employees or what have you. This was on a Sunday. And I was wearing my mask, right? You know, and then there was a guy that comes up and he wanted to buy some beer. And the woman said, well, we don't sell beer on Sundays. Not here in Baker County. We don't believe in that. But I'm thinking, well, you won't sell beer, but you're killing each other by not wearing a mask. So it was just kind of a, you know, crazy thing. And, you know, it depends on which county you're in. You know, but, you know, and it, you know, and the political part of it is troubling, and I think there'll be books written about it one day. For instance, there's a campaign that I'm a little involved with in House District 32. There's a woman that's running against Anthony Sabatini, who has filed lawsuits in, I think, 15 municipalities around the state of Florida, suggesting that they're mask ordinances are unconstitutional, and the courts have ruled not in his favor in every case. He's lost all those cases, but you got that type of behavior out there. There are individuals that are challenging mask ordinances politically. I think that with the numbers spiking as they are right now, I would have to believe there'll be a going back to the drawing board and looking at it differently, and some things that Florida depends on what the governor decides, but something Florida should probably roll back what it's done to open our state up in the last couple of weeks and roll it back to where it was maybe a month or so ago.
I agree with you. I mean, it saddens me to my core to see human beings so divided right now and spreading so much fear, because it makes us so anxious, especially us in healthcare. You know, we are trying so hard to protect people's loved ones. And when we come out in the open and we see other people that just don't care, and I hate to say a bad word on radio, but they don't give a damn. They don't. And it makes you feel like, wait a minute, we're all in this together. And if we want to flatten the curve, I mean, we have to socially distance. We have to wear masks. We have to look out for each other because, I mean, the pandemic doesn't really discriminate. COVID-19 doesn't care what your religion is, what your race is, how much money you have in the bank. It doesn't care what political party you have behind your name. COVID-19 doesn't care. It came for human beings, and it's affecting our breath. It's affecting us. So you're right. I would like to see them roll it back. But anyways, I don't know what else we can do. We've seen where, you know, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have come out in support of us listening to science and using common sense. What do you think happened to common sense, Mr. Michael Dobson?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's a little bit more complicated. I give you a good example. Something I'm kind of writing about right now, and I look at these campaigns, and I question if the Democrats are losing the optics war, because when you're looking at your television, your CNN, whichever station you choose, and the president is having his very large rallies and et cetera, there is that sense that there's this energy there, but this is a president who needs this, and he could not do that with a mask ordinance, not a mask ordinance that his campaign was implementing as a general rule. But the Democrats have done it a different way. They've decided to treat COVID-19 with the kid gloves and with the seriousness that it should be.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's coming down to optics. I was watching at the gym, and I was telling my co-host Ellen that at the gym sometimes I'm the only one wearing a mask. People don't wear it here in Brevard. But anyways, we have like 6 or 7 minutes left. I wanted to ask you really quickly, what advantages or disadvantages each political party has going into November 3rd? What do you see as the advantage or disadvantages in this presidential election?
Well, I'll tell you pretty quickly, if I can. One of the concerns that I've been kind of talking about with some folks is that I was concerned about if the Democratic Party overemphasized mail-in ballots to the degree that it downplayed the importance of voting in person, and if that decision will come back and haunt the Democratic Party, because there's always a percentage of mail-in ballots that are going to be kicked back. Florida's elections are generally won at the margins by small percentages. And that percentage of mail-in ballots could be problematic. What I'm hoping, and I think I'm seeing, that the Democratic Party can chew gum at the same time, and that they are getting folks out to the polls, the early vote, in person as well. So hopefully that concern won't come to fruition. And the Republican Party, they may have erred in not promoting mail-in ballots because the Democrats have come out of the chute, so to speak, with somewhat of an advantage with those initial ballots, those initial mail-in ballots. For instance, right now, more than 6 million Floridians have already voted. 42% of Florida's voters have voted. With all that said, the Republican Party is narrowing that gap. For instance, as of today, there's 2.2 million Republican voters compared to 2.6 million Democratic votes. But keep in mind, we're talking Republican and Democrats. We got the non-party affiliates. They've got 1.6 million votes in the bank. Now, we don't know who they voted for, but they got 1.6 million, that's still a pretty strong number for them at this point.
It is. It is. So do you think, how will the outcomes on November 3rd affect the Florida legislature? Have you looked into that? Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, I think, well, let me tell you what's going on with the Florida legislature. As you know, the Florida legislature has been controlled by Republicans, I believe, since 1998, I think. You know, and the numbers in the House are much larger, the disparity than in the Senate. In the Senate, the Democrats has to pick up three seats if it wants to at least be able to share power, and four seats to want to take over. Now, what has happened is that the Republican Senate Committee has decided to focus its energy on three seats to try and to keep, you know, because they're concerned that Democrats can take control in the future, if not this cycle. They've decided to really go after a couple of Democratic races. Some would suggest that the Democrats would be better off focusing on the House, because in the last couple of cycles, the Democrats have had some success at flipping some House seats. When you talk about it with respect to the larger campaign, the top of the ticket, the presidential race, it's going to get down to just voter turnout, because some people are party splitters in terms of how they vote, but most Democrats, when they get to the polls, they're going to vote down the line Democrat. If we really get everybody stoked and if Democrats really get out to the polls, I think that's going to help with those down ticket, like those Florida House representative seats, those Senate seats, and whatever partisan local seats that they are. It's going to get down to just getting people out. It's just going to be voters turnout. And this is an election that, you know, people are just so exhausted, I think, with what we experienced over the last almost 4 years.
I think that they're exhausted, and some are fed up, and some are so anxious. We have 2 minutes left. I wish I could talk to you forever. I'm going to have you back on. But can you tell us, in the remaining 2 minutes, you just hit the nail on the head with people being so exhausted. How can we bridge this divide that we see right now between the Democrats and the Republicans and all the issues that we have? I mean, so much anxiety and fear. What can we do as regular Americans who have to wake up on November 4th and go to work, go to school, do what we have to do? How can we bridge that divide right now?
Well, I think the important thing is that we got to have a politics in which we are talking about the things that we have in common, rather than stoking the divisions, because unfortunately, we have this great thing that was called the Internet. It was a great thing, but at the same time, what it's done is that it allowed information to be manipulated to divide people in various ways. And we don't get to remember all the things that we have in common. And like I tell Democratic candidates, is that if you're a Christian, talk about your Christianity as well. I mean, no one owns Christianity. No one owns the Second Amendment.
No one owns the flag. I always say, yeah. No one owns the flag. We all wake up every day and want peace of mind and well-being, and we want people to be in a great state. You know, if mind, their soul, whatever it is, people want to have good thoughts, good words, good actions, and you want to convey that to politicians so that we can see it in policy. One of my friends is going to be coming to Tallahassee. I hope you probably have met him already. Christopher Benjamin for State House District 107 in Miami. Have you met him? Have you met him yet?
No, I have not met him. Okay. Good.
He's one of my friends. He won that seat, and I'll be coming actually if I can on the 17th. But I hope to see you sometime. I'd love to have you call back in again. The segment went by so quickly, Ellen. You could take it from here.
Yes, Michael, thank you so much for calling in. That's okay. We're going to post all of Michael's information on our Facebook page as well as our website, cedamediainc.com. But we're going to take a quick station break, and we're going to come back with Kelly Clark with Project Noel.
Families will love the Space Coast Symphony Orchestra's Music at the Watering Hole, a free online family concert. The program will feature a stimulating original story by national best-selling author Michelle Wallace Campanelli that will come to life on screen with a film presentation created and directed by award-winning Mendex Studios. King of Africa, Kojo the Lion, was surprised when a box fell off a tourist bus and dropped a symphony of musical instruments near his watering hole. With a great love for music, Kojo decides to bring all of the wild animals of the savannah together. Could these natural enemies learn to get along to become an orchestra? And just what would they play? The concert will feature music from Madagascar, Lion King, Zootopia, Jungle Book, Jurassic Park, The Croods, and more. So once again, that's Music at the Watering Hole, Sunday, November the 8th at 3 p.m. This is a SpaceCoastSymphony.org online event. Music at the Watering Hole, Sunday, November the 8th, 3 o'clock, SpaceCoastSymphony.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in very sunny Cocoa, Florida today. Ellen,
finally, right?
Yeah, you did think.
The rain.
Yeah, I tell you, you can't plan for this weather anymore.
No, not anymore.
Just walk around with an umbrella because you don't know when you're going to need it. So our second segment today is with Kelly Clark, and she's going to be talking about Project Noel. I got it finally. See, after a couple of times. Noel was her daughter who accidentally died from a drug overdose, right?
Right.
And we all know somebody in our family or friends circle that have passed away from accidental drug overdose. And what do we do, right? Well, somebody like our friend Kelly Clark decided she was going to take her grief and put it into action. So tell us a little bit about your daughter and how you started Project Noel.
So, Noel was my oldest of seven children, and me and her were very, very close. She suffered from postpartum depression after having identical twin boys in 2013, and shortly after started using heroin, which was shocking to everyone that knew her because she was always very anti-drug in that type of drug. So she passed away July 30th of 2017. I ended up having her two identical twin boys, which are awesome little boys. But, you know, in all of the grief and the shock and everything, you know, it was, okay, how do you explain to four-year-old little boys that their mommy's not coming back because she died of a drug overdose? It just seemed like there was no right way to tell these kids. You know, you didn't want to tell them that she was sick because then they're going to be afraid to be sick. You know, I mean, it was just one thing after another. So I started reaching out for agencies or anything that could give me any kind of advice on how to, you know, explain this to these four-year-old little guys. And there was just nothing out there. And I was shocked. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things out there for the addicts, which is great. It's wonderful.
Right. But nothing for their children.
Yeah, it
you
just
want counseling.
Felt like,
yeah.
Right. It felt like they were kind of being forgotten about and kind of just left behind in this whole mess. On top of the millions and millions of grandparents that and great-grandparents and aunts and uncles and friends and you name it that have stepped forward to take care of these kids now. You know, and a lot of these grandparents and great-grandparents especially are living on Social Security. They're on a fixed income. And find themselves overnight, you know, raising little children again on top of trying to deal with their own grief at the same time.
Yeah.
I was so shocked when I went to that Parents Without Partners. They had asked me to do a talk, and I forget what the topic was, but I was so shocked. I was expecting to see younger people didn't have,
right.
You know, that were single. It was 90% of the people that were there were over the ages of 65,
so
raising
grandparents.
Toddlers.
Right.
I mean, sometimes they were great grandparents. It was just amazing. And again, same thing. all different socioeconomic backgrounds, every background you could possibly think of.
It makes you think.
Well, it makes you realize that how many other children have been suffering for so long and we didn't have a program.
Well, right.
So thank God for you. And again, the
Project
gift
Noel.
That Noel gave us.
Right. It makes you think about society as a whole. What is the message? What are we sending to our young ones? When something happens like this, that grandparents end up raising the children, what is our role to help you guys now?
Right.
You're right. There are so many people in need of stuff right now, especially with COVID-19.
Right.
There aren't enough resources to go around.
Right.
So it's great that you did this.
The sad thing is a lot of grandparents, can't get a lot of the financial help that, say like a foster family or so would get. It's completely different.
I always wonder why, because if somebody told me if you adopt a foster child, of course, I think I saw it in writing, the child will get like a 4-year college education if the child keeps up the grades.
Right.
Right? So grandparents won't get that.
No, grandparents don't get a
that
lot.
That does not make any sense to me. So your kid have to be adopted by a foster family in order to get some help instead of giving it to the grandparents. Does that make sense?
No.
Right, yeah. I took the boys in before my daughter, Noelle, passed away. But I had to quit working my full-time job and everything. And it actually took her dying for us to get any kind of help at all. And it was
That's
just...
another show. My goodness. Wow. So when did you start it? Like, how much... you waited, you grieved. You have 6 children that grieved along with you.
Yes.
You all needed counseling. You have the 2 boys. You're looking at them every day, and Noel is not coming home.
Right.
When did you decide to start Project Noel?
Well, right away I said, I feel like I need to be doing something. One big thing I've always told my kids is if you want something to change, get up and do something to change it. So I felt like I really needed to do something. So I just started praying, lots of praying. And it was close to Christmas when it just kind of all hit me. Noel, kids, Christmas. I said, hey, we're going to help the kids that have been affected for Christmas. It was really just something that I threw together and said this, it was what we'll do right here and now. And it blew up. It just completely blew up. And so people started saying, are you going to keep this going after Christmas? Well... yeah, I guess so. I guess just because it's not Christmas doesn't mean that these kids and families don't need some help.
Right. Well, isn't that what we always talk about is staying engaged and involved year-round? And it only takes one person to make a difference and start something, right? And so you are being the change you wish to see. That's what it is. Because if you wait for someone else to do it, they're not going to do it.
And you have all of these great things going on in multiple states. You're from Ohio.
I'm from Ohio.
So, looking on your Facebook page for Project Noel, you've got light shows, toy drives. You've got things going on in Sandusky and Oak Harbor, Ohio. But then you also have some things going on right here in Orlando and Brevard County as well.
We do.
With Texas Roadhouse, the gift cards, right?
Yeah, well, they're doing a dine-in fundraiser night at Texas Roadhouse on Monday, the
November 4th. I think I saw that.
Yeah, yes. Actually, it looks like they're doing it for a while.
I wanted to come, but I'm just hoping people wear their mask. Because it's going to be indoors, right?
November 9th, yeah. November 22nd, they say on here.
Well, that's for the gift cards. We're taking orders for gift cards, and that you can use for carry out. They're good at any Texas Roadhouse across the United States. And then a percentage of it goes to Project Noel.
And Chase Bank is doing some wonderful
things.
Chase Bank has been awesome. They we do an adopt-a-child program for Christmas, where somebody can adopt a child for Christmas and go out and shop for them. And Chase Bank has been awesome. They've agreed to kind of help us out. There's going to be an adopt-a-child board in every branch in Brevard County, so people can stop in, pick up a name if they want, go out and shop.
Yeah. And, so if people remember the Salvation Army trees, it's a
similar
to
that
scenario.
Yes.
And again, look at what's going on in your community. And where you think you can help the most, because this is around this time too, especially around Christmas time, everybody's looking for donations.
For something,
right?
Well, people are looking for something to give to.
Yeah, and speak from your heart.
Right.
So if Project Noel touches your heart, if you're listening right now here in Brevard County, just know that you can donate here in Brevard as well as in Orlando.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And if a business is listening and they'd like to have one of these boards, how do we get one? Do we contact Chase Bank or do we contact Project Noel?
They would contact Project Noel, and then we can get them out. They're all going to be out. The plan is to have them all out by November 3rd. We do have Zachary's Restaurant in Cape Canaveral and True to You Tattoo in Melbourne that have also jumped on, so they'll have a board up. But, yeah, they just contact us and we'll get one over to them.
So I understand that the Chase employees, they're volunteering to assemble these boards on November 31st, and they'll be distributing them over a period of 2 weeks. How did you get Chase Bank involved?
Well,
And I thank them for doing this because, you know, there are a lot of big banks in Brevard and Orlando and all over the place.
Right.
And they're not getting involved, but Chase Bank is getting involved, and that's wonderful.
It's awesome. We had actually put a thing out just on social media that we were looking for volunteers. And a couple of the employees of Chase Bank jumped right on, reached out, hey, we want to volunteer and get involved. They, in turn, told the banks about it, and one thing led to another, and here we are, and with all of them helping out.
Well, you know why? Because so many people think of the drug addict as the person on the street with the cardboard, right? Ellen, how many times we've talked about the stigma and the shame associated with mental health or people who are addicted to drugs, alcohol, and whatever they're addicted to. But then when you talk to people, God gave us this voice, and it's amazing that we can use it to communicate.
Right.
And so many of us are born with compassion and we have empathy. But once you start conversing with someone, you understand that it's not the person on the street corner holding up the sign with scraggly hair, beard, and no teeth.
Right.
It's regular people. So tell us about your daughter. I mean, your lovely child.
Yeah.
She wasn't one of these at the street corner.
Absolutely not.
Give us a little insight into Noelle and her life.
Yeah, Noelle was born in Orlando. And she was just, she was my kid. So, of course, I'm going to say great things about her. But she was adventurous. She was always, looking for an adventure to go on. She was very caring. She was giving. She put herself through college. She was a college graduate. She was an ultrasound tech. She worked in the medical field. Always very independent, always wanted to take care of herself. I used to laugh all the time that when, I had other kids, I said she was the oldest, and my other, hey, Mom, I need this. Hey, Mom, I need that. And I'm like, I never hear from Noelle because she was just always that
independent,
very independent, and she needed to do it on her own. When she went to starting to use this drug, I said it totally changes that person. It's not the same person anymore.
Yeah, we talked a little bit on our break about prescription drugs and how many people get hooked on them. So tell our listening audience, you've been talking to people all over wherever you have the Project Noel offices and organization. Tell us some of the things that people tell you about being hooked on prescription drugs, and what role does pharmaceutical companies and doctors play in this?
Well, I could go on for a long
time. Yeah, we should have you back again. whenever you come to Florida, you have a seat at the table here with us.
And as close as you have a phone, you can also have
there
a seat next
to
us.
There we go.
Call in, too. Yeah.
So many people, get addicted to these opioids by not even meaning to. They might have a surgery. They might break an arm. You name it. And they're prescribed opioids. And they go overboard with them, and then all of a sudden they stop. There's no more. Well, it doesn't take very long to develop an opioid addiction. The problem is, then they're stopped. You can't get them from the doctor anymore, but you can go to every other corner and find heroin. So it's very easy to transition, I guess I want to say. And it doesn't. This addiction does not discriminate against anyone. Race, color, amount of money you make, religion, nothing. you know, it's kind of like you were saying with COVID.
Yeah. It kind of offers them a way out to cope.
Yeah.
And people take it. It's like a lifeline that they're grabbing onto.
Right.
But, you know, we've had so many people on the show that talked about opioid addiction and homelessness and things like that. And, you know, people are talking about things like meditation. And, of course, we've had people talking about CBD on the show and things like that. But really and truly, families, moms and dads, they need someone to hold them by the hand and say, come on, let's show you how to deal with this with your child. And you could not find that for Noel's children.
Right, right. And, you know, we found a lot. You know, I mean, these kids, as a parent, I think you go through a lot of guilt. No matter what, you know, well, what if I'd have done this? If I'd have just done this, if I'd have said that, didn't say that. And the thing is we find out that a lot of these kids go through the same thing. You know, if I would have just been better, if I wouldn't have drove them crazy over this, if I wouldn't have done this.
If you weren't a helicopter mom, I always find myself saying, gosh, my son wouldn't have moved to LA if I didn't do this. Oh, I didn't do that. You know, guilt. You know, parenting comes with so much guilt sometimes, doesn't it?
It does.
But we love you. Don't feel guilty about this. Yes.
But yeah, you know, we actually had a 12-year-old end up committing suicide. It's probably 6 months after her mother passed away of an overdose. And, you know, it is. I mean, these kids are being affected. And the thing is that so many of them, depending on their age, don't understand even what happened. You know, it's, you know, how, like I said, how do you explain to a young person the opioid epidemic? You know, it's just, it's a tough thing. It's a really tough thing. So we do. We actually speak in a lot of high schools to educate kids. We've even spoken in elementary schools. We speak in a lot of churches to end stigma. The National Youth Advocates, we work with them. Just because, like I said, it affects kids
and
it ties in all
into,
different ways.
It ties also into health insurance.
Sure, it's preventative.
I mean, of course, preventative care, right?
And because we don't have a whole lot of mental health availability in our current system that we have now, I mean, you max out.
That's
right. Max out at a really low amount, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
The amount of help that people really do need.
Right. Because a lot of families who are struggling, nobody pays for mental health counseling.
No.
Or to so even to see. And if you call the police because someone at your home is have overdosed, what do they do? They don't have a social worker to send with the police. That's what we need. We could go on forever about.
First, we need the doctors not to be prescribing these anymore. Yeah. That would be that would be a good.
They're
first
doing
start.
Better though. Now I know at our job we have to have a script every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. It used to be years ago that they would just give it to you for a couple of months at a time. Now it's like every 14 days.
Yeah, but I don't even know if it's a safe enough drug to even have out there on the market at all. Like seems like there would be so many other options that we could do now, especially with Western medicine is not all that. You know, it hasn't always been all of that. So
I think, though, that there are people that do benefit from them. I do. People that are, you know.
Hip surgeries, back surgeries.
Cancer, you know, people in palliative care. You know, they do benefit from it. But it really needs to be monitored closely. And if you break an arm, you're in pain. But you don't need 6 months worth
exactly.
of.
Exactly.
Right.
2 weeks is fine. Just and then take some Advil.
Right.
I love Advil. I'm an advocate for
that. I'm a total advocate for Advil.
Me too. So tell us about the Christmas list. What do you see on the list? I mean, of course, it depends on the child's age.
Right.
Right. It reminds me of when I went home to Trinidad once, you know, years ago, Ellen, you could take something from the dollar store or maybe from Sears. You know, you could just a pair of socks, a toothbrush, you know, give them some chalk, underwear. Now you go home to Trinidad and they want to stuff from Macy's and Dillard's and this and that. And it's like, hey, wait a second. I live in the States and I am watching it. I don't buy that kind of stuff for myself. You know, but what kind of things are you seeing on the list? Because I'm sure children who've lost a parent would like a good Christmas present.
I'm sure. The thing is, we get a lot of, clothes, shoes. LOL dolls are a big hit right now with kids. So we're not... Bicycles are a big thing on the list. But we're not seeing a whole lot of real expensive, items. It's mainly necessities and...
So if a child wanted a computer, a few people could go in on that.
Right.
And two or three people could give $100 each.
Right.
You know, whatever. You know, you could help out that way.
Right.
So if somebody wanted to get involved with Project Noel and they wanted to volunteer, is there a website or how do they get involved?
Yeah, they can go to our Facebook page, Project Noel. We also have a Facebook page just for Brevard County, Project Noel Brevard County. And we have a website, www.projectnoel.com. And Noel is N-O-E-L-L-E.
So
on that projectnoel.com website is where anyone that knows of someone that would want to.
Yeah, there's an application.
So application
on there.
As soon as that pops up,
yep,
there's a little chat
that you can apply for some extra Christmas help. And I mean, it's not just grandparents. That, you know, like I said, it's anybody that's raising these kids. It's single parents.
Anyone who has been affected by an opioid overdose. Or a child who's suffering because they lost a parent.
And not even lost a parent to death. It could be that they're in prison. It could be that they're in active addiction and just can't.
Unfortunate circumstances.
Right.
So you gave up your job in, you said you went retail management so you could raise your grandchildren.
Right.
God bless you for that.
Thank you.
Because not a lot of people would do that nowadays. I mean, people
not
do it like.
Not a lot of people can.
Well, that's you saw a lot when you went to that seminar that you did, Ellen, but you know what? Time and money and energy to do that, especially like Ellen said, she saw great grandparents.
Oh, yeah.
So what did you do in retail before you gave it up?
Actually, I managed a men's warehouse for a long time.
That's a great job.
I know. It was a great job. It was. And I used to be into marketing as well.
Yeah.
But as soon as all this happened, and of course, when Noel first died, I couldn't have worked. There was no way. I didn't know if I was coming or going half the time. So I just went right in from that to Project Noel.
Kelly Clark, we need more people like you that can take a tragedy and turn it into something positive, you know? I mean, you'll always grieve because, you know, we are conditioned that we bury, our children bury us.
Right.
We're not, the way death works, we're not supposed to bury our kids.
Right.
So what would you tell, you know, like I've always been a helicopter parent and I've always said to my kids, you are the company you keep.
Right.
And I've seen a lot with friends, how they could lead your kids astray. Mm-hmm. Do you have any words of wisdom for young children? I mean, culturally, I come from a background where we tell our kids what's expected.
Right.
But then I immigrate to the United States and I have children. And here, you know, it's a little bit of a culture clash because children want what they see, what their friends are doing. They want to go out and dance. They want to go to the beach. They want to be unsupervised. I've always been one that if somebody comes to our home, I want to know who their parents are.
Right.
I want to know their license plate, rank, and number. Because
when
people hang out with your kids, they're learning what that person is doing. What would you say to kids?
Well, you know, for one thing, I think to parents, I say, you know, I don't think you can ever be careful enough. I don't think that you can ever educate your kids enough on what can happen out there. But it's also not, I think it's real important to a lot of parents to know that it's not their fault. They can be, you know, June Cleaver, you know.
Yeah, it happens to anybody. Right.
And it can still happen to your child.
Yeah.
The big thing is, you know, for the kids, what we have found is education, education, education. You know, this is what can happen to you. And when we go into a place and talk, we always bring in a recovering addict with us. So that, and we're very real with these kids, you know, and they'll tell them exactly where they went down. We don't use charts or graphs, you know, it's, this is what can happen, this is what did happen, and this was what can very easily happen to you. We don't want any kid to ever get involved in drugs and say, well, I didn't know that could happen.
Yeah.
You know.
So you bring
nobody
a live,
told me this.
You bring a live human being. And Ellen, this is where your expertise comes in with the internet. A lot of information kids find on the internet.
Absolutely. Yes. And it's got to be, unfortunately, it has to be the instant gratification, just like the drug, right? It has to be something that pops up, that makes them excited about it, that gets them funny, you know, that it has to be engaging right away. Because unfortunately, they just blow right by it. If not, you know,
I know
they
Kimberly
don't read
has
it
those controls on Maddie, where she can know what she's, what site she's looking
up,
and
sure,
all that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now
yeah.
Here's the
they
other thing
know about those things.
How do we bring back, you know, the conversations at the table? I mean, we've got single parents working two jobs. We've got parents working two jobs. It used to be in the old days you could sit down and have a conversation.
Right.
But we don't do that anymore. I mean, what do we say to people that, hey, at least a few times a week, try to find out what's going on with your kids?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I think, you know, as a parent, you need to be involved and know what's going on with your kids. Like I said, though, even if you are, sometimes that's not going to stop it, you know, especially I think teenagers, that's a really tough age. I don't know about you guys, but when I was a teenager, if my parents told me I wasn't allowed to do it, I couldn't wait to go out and do it. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. You know, so young teens, and we do have support groups, that we have teen groups, and then we have support groups for younger kids too. But yeah, with the support groups with the teens, that's a tough age.
Yes. Are you partnering up with any businesses, or maybe do you have any law enforcement officers that go with you sometimes? Who do you partner with to give these speeches?
We do. Well, I know in Ohio we you know, team up with a lot of the drug courts, recovery centers, rehabs, you know, you name it. Head Start, Help Me Grow. Now, down here, we are helping a lot of the families through Brevard Family Partnership. So they've been sending some families that have been affected our way so that we can offer them some assistance.
Yeah. My sister actually in, once again, Warren County, New Jersey, had started with Prevention Connections and was going into schools and actually got a grant to do, and it was preventative. It was going in and talking to middle school specifically about that.
Right.
And I wanted to give one other plug for one of our friends of the show, Louis Garcia, who was on that mission for the year.
For Narcan.
For Narcan. And as of May 20th of 2019, he had already saved, like, for over 21 months, he had donated 2,800 sprays, had done 106 classes, so forth and so on, and I believe he's still doing it. So I did want to plug that for anybody who is looking for Narcan. He'd be a great resource, at least
he's
to find
it. He's another great advocate.
954-859-4696.
You know, another thing we ought to talk about, and I wish we had more time. You know, I was watching the CNN special about the First Ladies. Remember when Nancy Reagan said, say no to drugs?
Yeah.
I personally thought that was a great campaign. I remember my children at that time constantly saying that, making posters and things like that.
Remember this is your brain, this is your birth, the two eggs.
I think I really think we ought to do that again.
Yeah. You know, the problem we have nowadays is the drugs now aren't
different.
The drugs that were around when we were younger.
Well, you know, you are a shining example of what a good mom and a good citizen is, because you took your tragedy and turned it into advocacy because you care about humanity. You care about people. You care about the grandkids out there, the children that are left behind. Mm-hmm. So thank you. And we would do whatever we can to get the events out and support you.
Thank you. Give us
your website one more time, or how someone could volunteer to help you with Project Noel.
Okay.
My dear Kelly Clark.
Okay. You can go to www.projectnoel.com. Our email, or my email personally, is Kelly Clark, K-E-L-I Clark, @projectnoel.org.
And thank you so much for joining us today and saving so many families' lives through Project Noel. Thank you to Michael Dobson for calling in and giving us that great interview, that first part of the show. And Sita, once again, thank you so much for all the fantastic guests that you bring to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends each Monday live here on 1510 WWBC. We'll see you next week.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC.
You're listening to WWBC, COCO, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, COCO, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne.